The Man in Line with Andy Witt.
Faster by, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line, number two in our Green Future series. Anything that you want to comment on in the next hour, please get in touch by texting 166177, email studio at manxradio.com, call 66 13 68, or even WhatsApp on 166177. Make sure we're in your contacts book. So this week, Liberal Vanin. The Liberal Vanin Party is here. The chair's Paul Weatherall. Leader is Laurie Hooper. So our Green Future from the Liberal Vanin. And first of all, to the leader of the Liberal Vanin, Laurie Hooper, MHK, one of the two Ramsey MHK. Laurie Hooper, how green do you consider yourself?
Well, probably not as green as I should be, if I'm perfectly honest. Everyone does, I think, what they can, and I really think that's really our party's position has been that for quite a while, really, is do what you can for yourself, at the most part. And we know on the island we're not going to make a systematic change to global policy from here, but we are going to do our bit, I think, and make sure we are showing that kind of moral leadership. And that's really where I'd be coming from, is to say, look, that's just something I think all politicians should be doing, really. If we're going to be talking the talk, we've got to be willing to put our money where our mouth is, essentially, and walk the walk at the same time.
Okay, and the island's stated aim is to reduce, 45% greenhouse gas emissions by 2035, isn't it?
That's the current aim. I'm hoping that date will be brought forward to 2030 when we see the action plan in July, and that's definitely been Liberal Vanin's position for some time, that we should be as ambitious as we can be. There's lots of very good reasons for it, but the main ones are economic, funnily enough. There's much more money in it for us if we move quicker than if we hang around and wait and join the herd later on.
Okay, and Paul Weatherall, what does the chairman think?
I agree with what Laurie's just said in terms of who's greener than anyone else. As Laurie said, everyone's in a position of doing their best to help us move towards the position we need to be. We've got to take people with us. We declared an emergency on this island in 2019. It hasn't felt like an emergency since in the way that governments responded. And I'm hoping that the report that's coming out from the Climate Change Transformation Board later this summer will begin to move us forward. But we've got to take some serious decisions very quickly.
You were on one of the protests, weren't you? Or were you just attending one of the protests?
I didn't organise a protest, but I attended it. Yes, I was in the public gallery and expelled from Tynwald a couple of weeks ago. That was to make the point that, as Laurie has just said, the position of government is to move towards 45% by 2035 at the moment. We were dismayed that after the public consultation, people responding by a majority called for it to be 45% by 2030. Tynwald backtracked on that. So that was what the protest was about. We feel that they're still prevaricating, not doing things quickly enough, not taking things seriously enough. So we're a bit of a pressure group to try and keep government on its toes in terms of responding to climate change. But they're moving in the right direction.
Paul Weatherall, does anybody know what the Isle of Man's carbon footprint is?
It's been calculated. It varies depending on when you take the baseline. That's one of the problems. And everyone has to step up and just reduce the amount of fossil fuels that we're using. Because the bottom line is, every time we burn a litre of oil, every time we turn on our gas cookers, we're causing more problems. And we've got to be part of the solution and not continuing to be part of the problem.
I mean, do you think it's helpful, it would be helpful to actually have some numbers on this? Because telling people they have to reduce their carbon footprint and them not knowing where they stand on that, what the statistics are. It's like, you know, it's the shifting, whispering sands. Nobody,
the general public don't quite know. They were published as part of James Curran's work that he did right back in 2018, 2019, at the start of all this process. So if you do want to go, there's a document which is called A Guide to the Isle of Man Greenhouse Gas Inventory. And actually, it's an independent report produced by a company called Ether. And it gives quite a lot of detail around that. There's even some nice graphs and pictures if you're not interested in the detail behind it, but it does show you pretty clearly where we are and how the Isle of Man actually per capita has been gradually increasing its emissions over the last 10 to 15 years, whereas the UK, for example, have been reducing theirs. So we're very late to this party. And something Paul said earlier, it was quite interesting. He said that we've declared an emergency on the island, and it doesn't feel like an emergency, but I bet it feels like an emergency right now with gas prices going up 54% and with electricity prices going up. Now we are in an emergency, and it's the reality is if government previously had acted quicker, there'd have been more people with better insulated homes, more people not reliant on gas and not being subject to some of these quite extortionate price increases that we're seeing of the global market.
What's the first step then for the Manx government? What's the first step to combat the emergency, to combat the crisis?
The first step is exactly what the first step has been for quite some time, which is to make sure that funding is available to help people make the changes that need to be made. So, I mean, some of the changes are quite low cost by comparison, things like insulating your home or double glazing windows. They're quite well established. Everyone knows these are good things to do and they'll save you money in the long run. Right the way up to the more expensive work that needs to be done around solar panels or air source heat pumps and all the other big ticket items. But the crucial point to bear in mind with all of this is when we talk about climate change and the green agenda and sustainability, we always talk about emissions, always. And this is where I think people like the Green Party get it wrong, because they always talk about emissions. And actually, what we should be talking about is cost of living. What we should be talking about is if you do these things, if government helps you make your home more energy efficient, if we help you insulate your house and get an air source heat pump and get off your gas boiler and all the other things that we need to do, your costs will go down, because you won't be spending all this money buying gas from, you know, the Norwegian seas and what have you, that's costing us an absolute fortune right now. And That's the truth of the matter. You asked me how green I am. I switched to an electric car a couple of years ago, and actually it's cheaper. My monthly fuel bill is around £11 at the moment in electricity. That's what I spend in a month driving the car to and from Douglas twice a day, every day. By comparison, you know, my wife drives a little Ford Fiesta, a little petrol vehicle. Her bill is double that at least. And so immediately, as long as you can afford to invest the capital up front, and that's where the problem comes in, because a lot of people don't have money lying around that you can just buy a brand new car or a brand new heat pump or brand new insulation. And that's where government needs to step in to help people afford some of these changes, because ultimately the payback is there. We know it'll get them, you'll make the money back in the end. We know that you as an individual will save money, so we know that there are ways for government to help you save money and get repaid for the money it's given you in the first place. There's really no reason not to do this. And if you look at some of the I've made this point in Timwald a few times, when you look at some of the things we need to do, pretty much everything that needs to be done to help solve the climate emergency on the island involves generating economic activity. Involves generating jobs, it involves people investing in the island and spending on the island. And actually, all these things are really positive, actually, in the short term, at least for our economic outlook. And so we're in this bizarre situation where what we're trying to ask government to do is invest in the Isle of Man in order to solve our climate emergency and invest in the Isle of Man to bring down the cost of living. And if you put it like that, why would you not? Why would you not be in favour of inward investment, investing in the Isle of Man, investing in people, investing in their homes, investing in jobs and in skills? Where's the downside? It's all this stuff government should be doing anyway. All we're suggesting is when you do it, make sure you do it with one eye on making sure that what you're investing in is sustainable and is long term.
And Paul Weatherill, perhaps one of the places to start is public sector housing. I mean, that's owned, that's in the public sector. Surely government or local authorities should be, if they make a start, surely the private sector will take note.
Yeah, and it's appalling, isn't it, that the discussions last week between the DOI and Douglas Borough Council on the Peel Road development is still all over the place in terms of who's responsible for deciding whether solar panels go on new build or not. It should be a matter of planning consent. You shouldn't get planning consent for new builds unless solar panels are installed as part of the process, and the same for anyone wanting to renew a roof. Solar panels should be de facto part of the solution. So, you know, it's issues like this that are still being jockeyed between different parts of government on the island, between central government and local authorities in this case, that we feel government needs to get its act together. We've just heard on your news bulletin at 12 that Alex Allenson was suggesting that the green grant scheme is inadequate, and we agreed with that. We campaigned on that during the last general election, that £6,000 is a 50% grant towards people renewing insulation and installing heat pumps goes nowhere near far enough. It doesn't cover the cost by any means. Most people don't have that £6,000 to invest in the first place. And what we need is a loan scheme for people to be able to pay back over a long period of time, 20, 25 years perhaps, and get it done properly.
Okay, let's get to the lines now. And David's first with us on Manorline. Hi, David. You're live with Laurie Hooper. Hi. And Paul Weatherall.
Hi, good afternoon, Andy. Good afternoon, gentlemen. It's not much of a question. It's just a little bit of a, well, it's not sort of criticism or whatever. Is that I just heard that, like, you're meant to be the Green Party and we're meant to be doing this annual. You don't even know the carbon footprint of the Isle of Man. And that should be the first thing you know should know. To work off what the Isle of Man needs to be doing. And, you know, everyone wants to do a little bit to make the environment a bit better, but if this, everyone keeps banging on about a global emergency, there's no proof, there's no scientific written proof that we're in a global emergency.
Okay. Okay. Paul Weatherall?
Well, if I can come back straight on the last point. The IPCC report that came out a couple of days ago...
IPCC is?
The International Commission on Climate Change. Yeah. And we're on target at the moment for not keeping to the targets already agreed. And unless things change drastically around the world, then we're not going to meet the 1.5 degrees centigrade of increasing global warming that people acknowledge the only way in which we can sustain our current environmental standards. So the emergency is there. The climate science is there. I disagree with you in that we first of all need to know what the carbon footprint is. What we need to know is how best to manage people's changing from using fossil fuels. Everyone knows that our use of fossil fuels has to go down. We have to reduce that consumption.
Okay, David?
Yeah, well, yeah, I understand that. But it's just, there's no data brought out. There's nothing that the people can actually sit and read. Down the Somerset, they're building a new nuclear power station. We've got gas off the Isle of Man. We're not going to get rid of gas for another 30 years. Okay. All the rest of the big countries around the world are just going to be using it.
And okay. if it helps, David, if you are interested in the detail, have a look on the government climate website, because there's a copy of a report on there which I've referred to already, called the Isle of Man Greenhouse Gas Inventory Report, part of the James Corran work that was done, and it details in there exactly what our carbon output is. And if it helps, it talks about from 1990, where the emissions were around about 0.5 megatons of carbon dioxide equivalent. In 2017, that had increased to 0.84 megatons. So basically what it says is our carbon output had increased by about 66% in that period.
Okay, so 0.8 megatons, is that 800,000 tons?
That's a megaton, as far as I understand it. The comparison figure, though, which is really interesting, is in the same period of time, the UK actually nearly halved their output in that time. And it's because of things like you mentioned, the investing in nuclear power and renewables, which we haven't done. We've been very reliant on our on-island gas plant. And you mentioned that gas is going to be around for 30 years. That gas plant is due for replacement or renewal within the next 15. Okay. So by the middle of the 2030s, actually, we will probably have completely replaced that gas power plant with something else. And when that goes, that's by far the single largest gas user on the island is the gas power plant.
Okay, David, do you think we should go for this gas off Mackled?
Well, yeah, because in the long run, it's going to save us hundreds of millions of pounds. We'll be able to get the profits off that. We'll pay for it instead of coming out of pension funds and basically breaking the Isle of Man, the bank.
Okay. All right. Thanks, exactly. Dave. We appreciate that. Laurie Hooper, where do you stand on the gas off Mackled?
So I've been clear on this from day one. If it can be done in a net zero way, then there's no negative contribution to the climate emergency. You'd be okay to do it. But the reality is it can't be done in that way. I've not yet seen any evidence that supports that it can. And I actually had an exchange with one of the directors of Kroger on Facebook where he accepted that that was also the case. They probably couldn't do it in a totally net zero way. And it's going to take 10 years, as far as I understand it. When they talked to the PAG meeting the other month, they were talking about 2029 before they'd be getting anything out of the ground. Well, by that point, do you really want to be paying £3,000 a year for gas for the next decade, okay, waiting for the silver bullet to hit, or would you rather take action today?
Paul Weatherall, what do you think of the gas?
Well, as Laurie's just said, the gas power plant at Pull Rose is due for renewal within the next 10, 12 years. So we won't actually need that gas coming out of the sea. And again, it's adding to the problem rather than providing a solution. The solution is to move to renewables as quickly as we can and not necessarily installing renewables here on the island in terms of wind turbines onshore. It's probably going to be better to lease our seabed to offshore wind turbines that might get then fed back into the UK and put another interconnector in to increase the supply of electricity from the UK, bringing renewable energy onto the island in that way.
Okay, what we about do not on, we, on island wind farms. What do you think about those?
I think we'll need a few. We need energy security so we don't rely totally on supply from the UK. So we will need energy supply here and a few wind turbines, increasing the solar capacity for individual firms on the island, for community organisations and for individuals will reduce the demand for gas supply, oil supply, and that's the way forward, I think, for the island.
Okay.
Government's responsibility is to manage this change, to help people be able to afford the changes that are coming. And not necessarily to pay for it all themselves.
Okay, we're talking with Laurie Hooper, leader of Liberal Vanin, and Paul Weatherall's the chair of Liberal Vanin, just about our green future, and that's an all-encompassing subject, really, because it covers all sorts of things, from resilience in the power supply that we're going to be using in the future, wherever that power supply comes from, how we're going to heat our food and heat our homes, but also public transport. Laurie Hooper, where does Liberal Vanin stand on public transport?
Quite a big fan of public transport, to be honest. You'll have seen in the north, we've gone through a lot of changes in Ramsey and the north with the bus services, moving to the demand responsive and away from the regular scheduled services that DOI used to run. Mixed feedback on that, if I'm honest. So some people seem to like the new demand responsive, some people would prefer a bit more regular service. I think there's a balance to be struck somewhere. I think we probably need to get a few more of the regular services back, but also the demand responsive has got really interesting potential in terms of things like patient transfer. So in terms of getting to and from your hospital appointment, it would be great if a bus could pick you up from your house and take you straight to the hospital and take you back home again afterwards.
It's an ideal way of getting people out of cars, though. Lots of public transport, and last week Devon Watson, Mr. Free Busman, and he's always talked about free public transport, which he reckons will cost the taxpayer £4 million a year. Free public transport will get people out of cars.
So I'm not sure about that, actually. So when you talk to people about why they don't use buses, cost sometimes comes up, but more often it's the convenience. So I don't have swathes of people telling me, oh, if only the bus was free, I'd get it into Douglas every day. Actually, most people don't want to get the bus in because it's longer, it's a bit more inconvenient, it's not at times that you need it. So there's lots more challenges, I think, rather than just making things free. But I think there's definitely an argument, especially now when we're looking at the cost of living increases, to be saying, should we try this? I'm happy to give it a go. I'm a firm believer in trying things, seeing if they work, and if they don't, you go back and make changes. So I think Alf Cannon announced on Tuesday in the House of Keys that the government is looking at, well, what can we do in terms of incentivising public transport use, and that could very well involve discounted fares or free bus journeys or whatever it might be.
Okay. All right, Paul Weatherall, public transport, and what about active travel?
Active travel, well, encouraging people to walk, cycle is good for your health. It gets you out of your car. But like Laurie said, most in a rural area, and the majority of the Isle of Man is a rural area, the convenience of being able to use your car is more important. And active travel has a place. Free or cheap bus fares have a place, probably more in Douglas and Onchan than the rest of the island. So I would look at, horses for courses and have a system in place across the island that works in best for the different locations on the island.
One thing that gets talked about quite a bit in terms of active travel is this idea of a 15 or a 20 minute neighbourhood. Basically everything is within a 15 minute walk of where you live, and if you look at places like Ramsey, pretty much everywhere in Ramsey is within a 15 minute walk of where you live, and so in some ways we're already in an ideal place on the Isle of Man to start encouraging some of this kind of change in behaviours, because we're the right place for it anyway. You don't need to do anything to Ramsey to make it everything be within 15 minutes of your house, because you're already there.
But that's not the case for Jerby, Andreas, Balaf, Crosby.
Okay. Howard, you're live with Laurie Hooper and Paul Weatherall.
Good morning, gentlemen. Morning, Andy. Or afternoon, as it is now. I just listened to you a few minutes ago. I think it was Mr. Weatherall said about doing the power station come to the end of its useful life in 10 to 15 years' time. Now, we have a perfectly adequate building there, and the power supply through wind farms, we don't do tidal, and various other aspects of what they call natural power supply. Tonight, we're going to get gale force winds. So that means the likes of the wind farms, etc., will be either shut down or locked down, and again, then we won't have any power. This is assuming the power station is done away with. Let's say a perfectly adequate building. Why are the suggestions not to introduce more efficient and better producing electric generators within that building? The question has never been answered. What are they going to do with the building if they do away with all the engines that's in there? Plus the fact that you say about interconnectors. That puts the Isle of Man then totally dependent on a power supply from the UK, which, as we've seen of recent, a lot of the power supply companies were supplying what they call cheap energy and then went down the pan. Now, if they want to pull the plug on somewhere, it's easier to pull the plug at Bispham, and that would wipe the Isle of Man power supply out. So it's far better, in my mind, I don't know what yours, for the Isle of Man to be independent. Have an interconnector, by all means, as it was put in originally, as an emergency backup, not as a sole supply.
Okay, Laurie Hooper.
So I'd agree with a lot of that, actually, in terms of energy independence. I don't want to be reliant on the UK at all. I think we do need to have independence over here. The interconnector isn't just for the emergency, actually. They use it quite often to buy in or sell out electricity to balance the load. So what you're talking about there in terms of when the wind isn't blowing or when the wind farms are shut down, you're absolutely right. Renewables don't produce a constant stream of power like gas or nuclear does, which is why you need a healthy mix so that, you know, when the sun is shining and the wind isn't blowing, your solar is generating the power. When the wind's blowing and it's nighttime, your wind is generating the power. You probably also need an element of storage as well to make sure that you can balance out the generation of the power compared to when you need to use it. All this stuff has been considered actually in quite a lot of detail in something called the Future Energy Scenarios report that was consulted on, I want to say last year, it might have been the year before, but again, it's publicly available on the Consultation Hub website if you want to take a look at it. And it talks about lots of different options for the island in terms of securing energy independence. It talks about everything from just relying on interconnectors on the one hand right the way through to building brand new power plants on the island entirely and everything in between. It talks about should we have a biomass power plant, for example, burning, you know, wood chip rather than gas. So all these things I think are in the mix. Whether or not they decide to turn off the gas power plant or repurpose it, I don't know the answer to that, but I think you make a very good point. If, for example, we could transition off natural gas onto something like hydrogen, like it's talked about quite a lot, renewably generated hydrogen gas could be the way forward for the power plant in Paul Rose. I think the only point I think me and Paul were trying to make around the power plant being turned off is that whatever happens, it's highly unlikely it's going to be gas from 2030 to 2034. It could very well be a power plant on that same site with different turbines burning a different kind of fuel, but gas is almost certainly not going to be what we're relying on from about 15 years' time, which is why a lot of this stuff is so important. So we start making these transitions now, because you can't just snap your fingers and create a new power plant and a new energy grid overnight. It will take a lot of time to get this investment in place and to make sure we are securing our energy supply, because the absolute last thing we want is for the lights to go off.
Okay, all right,
well,
thanks, Howard.
That's more or less what's going to happen if should you rely on an outside source for fuel, plus the, as I say, the interconnectors. But the power station itself is a perfectly adequate building, and it's not very old by any means, and it'd be a crying shame if this government and any future government decided just to scrap it.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Howard. All right. I appreciate that. A note in from Alan, who just said the installation of solar panels on a roof is only a small part of the system. And a WhatsApp from Alan, who said, aren't we doing this back to front? Surely all the money should be invested in a renewable energy power station and then have our own supply, which can be passed on to customers. As well, it cuts out the need for people having to invest in their own renewable methods of heat. All heat pumps and the like maybe will be soon outdated because technology really moves on. Lots and lots of calls in and lots of messages. But also, we'll also be considering tidal power. There is a tidal power expert on the Isle of Man.
I'm taking my expertise elsewhere. We were already talking to the Scottish government, Welsh government, and there's another project in Ireland where the governments there are much more supportive of tidal energy.
And we're talking to Paul Weatherall and Laurie Hooper from Liberal Van in our Man in Line today.
You want how much? 1% commission? That's £2,000 to sell my house? That's it. I'm seeing red.
Sick of huge commission fees? Don't get mad. See red. With CG Red, the new service from Cowley Groves, you can sell any house up to £350,000 for a fixed £750 fee. That's a saving of up to £2,750 on what you'd pay with a traditional estate agent.
So go on, see red. Visit cgred.im. They're giving other estate agents a darn good thrashing.
Is your first aid kit up to date and is it compliant? St John Ambulance can help. We have a range of first aid kits, both for home and workplace, starting at only £10. From an item as small as a plaster to life-saving equipment such as a defibrillator. We hold many items in stock. Call 674 387 to discuss your needs or email marketing@sja.org.in to receive a catalogue. St John Ambulance, here to help.
At Paradise and Gale, you'll always find a stylish selection of furniture for every room. And with exciting new arrivals, now's the perfect time to freshen up your home. And you can have it right now. We've doubled our warehouse space, so even more of our stunning furniture and beds are available for free and immediate delivery than ever before. From living room, dining room and bedroom to home office and more. Come and see for yourself. Paradise and Gale. You'll love our furniture. You'll love our prices.
We're back. Easter Festival of Plays. Thursday, the 21st of April. The London team, Muttley and Minx, present a modern version of The Importance of Being Earnest by Oscar Wilde. Curtain up, 7:30. Adjudicator, Jan Palmer-Sayer. Tickets now on sale from the Villa Marina and the Welcome Centre. Full details on madfair.in. Supported by Manx Radio.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Laurie Hooper and Paul Weatherall from Liberal Van. And John's with us. Hi, John.
Oh, fastamai, Winnie, and fastamai to the two gentlemen. You've mentioned emergency several times. I see from my dictionary that an emergency is defined as a serious, unexpected and dangerous situation requiring immediate action. Well, let's just say this is not the modest climate change which we've experienced is by no means unexpected. People have been banging on about it for decades. Serious? Well, the Isle of Man has experienced a very modest change in temperature, about 0.9 of a degree since 1949. So it's not serious, and it's scarcely dangerous. In fact, it's been largely beneficial. I mean, there's been the growing season is longer. Less people. There's a report from across that over the last couple of 20 years. And in, over the last 20 years, there's been no change in the temperature of either the Isle of Man or the world.
OK, let's bring in Paul Weatherall then. Paul Weatherall, is there an emergency? If there isn't one here, where is the one?
There is an emergency. It's a global emergency. The Isle of Man government itself declared there was an emergency back in 2019. We're an island, but we're also part of the world. And what we do here may not make a great deal of difference on a global scale, but we can't ignore it. What we're saying to government is that government has to prepare people for changes that are going to happen anyway. Motor manufacturers in 2030 in Europe and across the world are going to be stopping producing petrol and diesel-driven vehicles for mass consumption. There'll still be petrol and diesel vehicles produced after that, but they'll be on a much smaller scale. So we have to prepare people here on the island for the fact that electric cars are the future. We also have to prepare people for the fact that oil and gas boilers are not going to be supplied in 5 or 10 years' time to people when their boilers need replacing. So what are the alternatives? Government has to prepare people for that and, if necessary, help them to finance the changes.
OK. John, sorry, what's your view?
The IPCC does not use emergency. The IPCC has actually criticised, well, quite mildly, the use of emergencies and crises and apocalypses and all this sort of thing. If you're going to quote the IPCC, then an emergency, this term of emergency is in fact completely outside the remit. And there is, I've sent Laurie Hooper a great deal of information from people who have been looking at this very thing. There is no climate emergency in the world.
Okay, Laurie Hooper.
The IPCC are themselves explicit about this. I mean, there's an article from February this year where the IPCC themselves state human-induced climate change is causing dangerous and widespread disruption in nature and affecting the lives of billions of people around the world. I mean, the science on this is almost, it's a statement of fact. It is okay. What it is.
Will you accept, though, Laurie Hooper, that on the Isle of Man, climate change hasn't killed anybody. It hasn't inundated any islands across the Isle of Man.
Hasn't it? So we've had higher incidences of flooding recently than we've seen in the past. And they, I would submit, people living in Laxey, very concerned by the impact of flooding on Laxey in recent years. I'm very concerned about the potential increase in flood risk in Ramsey, actually. And this we're seeing now through people talking to their insurance companies and being told the same thing. The reality is, whether you believe in climate change or not, as Paul has already said, the world and the markets that we rely on are moving on. And so if we don't act, we will be left behind. We'll be left in a situation where we can't actually buy the cars that are being produced because we don't have the electric infrastructure to support them. We won't be able to buy the right kinds of boilers. And this kind of stuff happens already. So the MUA are going out replacing all the smart meters on the island. And one of the reasons for that is they can't purchase the meters they used to buy. So the reality is, as much as we would like to think we're isolated from the world and from these things, whether you believe in climate change or human-induced climate change or not is almost beside the point, because we are going to have to deal with these global changes and the global markets that we rely on.
Okay. All right. A final word, John?
The war in Ukraine has turned everything on its head. And now many countries are now realizing that power stability and power availability is the most important criteria. And that does not come from windmills. It does not come from solar panels, which are made in China, which are unrecyclable and likely made with slave labor by Uyghurs. You have to have your own. We need our own gas supply as soon as possible, and we must keep close tabs on nuclear, which is going to be a very large portion of the UK's power in the future, because the government there has decided it's going to do so. And okay. I'm afraid,
All right. All right. We appreciate your point, John. It's just that we have to move on, because I want to...
On John there, I was going to actually mention Ukraine. I totally disagree with what John's just said, or most of what he's just said. We've, on the island, just taken our first Ukrainian refugees. One of the things that the IPC have been warning about in all of their reports over the last decade is the fact that global warming is going to increase the level of conflict in the world, as well as the level of flooding and the level of sea change and the impact of storms becoming more frequent, more damaging. But the conflict that we're seeing in Ukraine has many complex causes, but one of them is to do with energy supply. And the sooner we move away from our reliance on Russian gas, Russian oil, oil and gas generally, and move towards a more sustainable future based on renewable energy, the better. And that is the way forward to reduce conflict.
Okay, Paul Weatherall, that is, Chair of Liberal Vanin. We've talked about renewables and offshore and onshore wind, but a renewable energy entrepreneur on the Isle of Man is taking his expertise elsewhere. Steve Malley claims the Manx government obstructed his plans for bringing tidal power to the Isle of Man. Steve was aiming to generate electricity from three tidal wave sites around the coast, but he ran into difficulties over government restrictions. Now, Steve spoke to Barry Redfern about the scheme that could have satisfied much of the island's needs.
In the end, the government here put unrealistic expectations on us, which meant that the technology we had was simply not fit here. I thought their expectations were unrealistic. We thought ours were perfectly genuine and that the project would have worked very well here.
What exactly were the restrictions that held you back?
The turbines that we were due to use were actually 27 metres tall. So therefore they had to sit on the seabed. In the UK, the maritime authorities want a gap of 8 metres from the top of the turbine blades to low tide level. The Isle of Man insisted they wanted 30 metres. So 30 metres plus 27 metres meant that we could only put turbines in water that was a minimum of 57 metres deep. And that's not necessarily where the strongest flow is. So that basically made the whole project unviable. We wanted to... the Isle of Man to use the same criteria as the UK maritime authorities, but they insisted they wanted to have this massive clearance of 30 metres just in case big super tankers were to sail across the point of air.
So what's your feeling now about the Isle of Man not backing you?
I'm taking my expertise elsewhere.
Where to?
Well, we were already talking to the Scottish Government, Welsh Government, and there's another project in Ireland where the governments there are much more supportive of tidal energy.
Do you think it's a real loss for the Isle of Man?
Absolutely. We have some great tidal currents around the island. It's an invisible project, and I know that islanders don't like to see wind turbines or solar parks or whatever. It's an invisible device, operates quietly under the water, no one knows about it. And it would have generated a lot of power. Could run baseload on the Isle of Man.
How much power?
Well, we had anticipated 240 megawatts. Initially, we wanted to put it into the local grid, and the utility at the time said that that would be a good idea, but they retracted that later on. And we subsequently said, well, if we can generate the power, can we use your cables and send it to the UK as an export from the Isle of Man? And that didn't work either. So ultimately, we decided that we were going to put a cable in between the Isle of Man and Scotland. And the Scottish Development Council, Scottish Energy, were very keen. They even introduced us to contractors at that end. But by this time, the government in the Isle of Man had just made it so difficult for us, our investors just decided to pull out.
Man in line on our green future, and that was Steve Malley talking about tidal power. Laurie Hooper is the leader of Liberal Vanin. What are your views on tidal power?
I don't really have any, if I'm honest. Just like any other kind of renewable power generation, if it works, why wouldn't we use it? I mean, the view I've held for a long time on all this stuff is you have to be neutral about the type of technology used. We can't put all of our eggs in one basket. You can't pretend that hydrogen's going to solve all your problems, or solar, or wind, or tidal. You're going to need a mixture. And if someone comes forward with a great idea for cheap tidal generation on the Isle of Man, why wouldn't we support it? I think the unfortunate reality is, at the moment, tidal is very expensive for what you get. It isn't by any stretch competitive financially yet. The UK is looking to invest millions, I think, over the next few years, investing in making it cheaper, improving the technology. So are we there? Were we there 5 years ago or 7 years ago, I think, when the licence was issued? I don't know the answer to that, but it certainly sounds like we might have been. So no, if someone's got some great tidal ideas and they come forward, I'd be more than happy to support that on the Isle of Man.
Paul Weatherall?
I agree. I think you... Obviously, you would think, with the tidal power around the island, that that is a great future for renewable power generation. But as Laurie said, the technology is developing. There's some experimental work going on in Orkney and around Scotland and elsewhere in the UK, with turbines, I think, being sited in the North Sea shortly. But it's not cost-effective at the moment, and the island really isn't in a position to be at the forefront of technological development, sadly. If an academic institution or research organisation or a big multinational company was prepared to put money in to invest in project development for tidal here on the island, then I'm sure the government would and should jump at it.
Okay, it's, what are we now, 13 minutes before one. Live with Liberal Vannon today on our Green Future.
Celebrating the Isle of Man's unique transport heritage. Don't miss Rush Hour on the railways. This exciting four-day event starts on Easter Friday with a great range of activities and experiences for everyone, from enthusiasts to families. Events include motorman taster lessons, station, workshop and yard tours, and much more. Rush Hour runs from the 15th to the 18th of April. For more information, visit rail.im.
Love your top. Where did you get it?
That new place, the Electric Convective?
The what?
Oh, it's great. They've so much. Men's and women's clothing and footwear, school uniforms, plus vintage collectibles, handmade things, and such amazing value.
Do you mean the Eclectic Collective at Balfane Estate?
That's the place.
Top fashion brands like Converse and Skechers to jewellery, crockery and more. Search the Eclectic Collective Balasella on Facebook or call 339 807.
The Eclectic Collective. Remember the name.
Manx Radio and Tell Skips have got together for a spring winning weekend. This weekend, there'll be a photo on our Facebook page along with an anagram. If you can work out the name of a flower from the clues, text it with your name to 166177. Then be listening to Manx Radio Breakfast on Monday to see if you have won a £200 voucher to spend in 1886 Bar and Grill. And if you need a skip to spring clean your home or garden, just search Tells Limited or call 677137. The spring winning weekend with Tells Skips and your nation station, Manx Radio.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Talking to Laurie Hooper and Paul Weatherall, and so I've seen some of the heat pumps, says this correspondent. They're horrible looking things which are stuck to the side of your house, cost a fortune, and put about as much heat as rubbing your hands together. Is that true, Paul?
It's not true. I've seen heat pumps in operation, and they're working effectively even in Manx cottages. What you do have to do is to improve the insulation of your house and keep the draft level to a minimum. But it all depends, you know, everyone's circumstances are different. It's easier to install heat pump technology in new builds than it is to convert existing properties. But that's true for virtually everything you do to an existing property. It's always cheaper to put up a new house with a new roof and solar panels on it than it is to take a roof off an existing cottage and then install solar panels.
Okay, Bonzo, you're live with Paul Weatherall and Laurie Hooper.
Hi, Bonzo. Faster,
hey, yeah. Hi there, yes. Yes, talking about tidal, which the previous caller was discussing, and also the piece on the person who has taken their skills elsewhere. One of the reasons for that is something called contracts for difference. And I think Paul and Laurie are familiar with that, in that that's the way of UK government selling and operating a market in renewable energy, which then creates the grid. Now, the Isle of Man is not in that contracts for difference system, which is why we don't have offshore wind farms and why we don't have tidal facilities, because the investors don't get the subsidy which you do from that contracts for difference environment, because the territorial waters are ours at 12 miles. Now, I'm sure that in the forthcoming energy strategy, which the government is announcing, I think, later this week in the UK, that there will be the possibility that the Isle of Man could actually be within contracts for difference, because they are looking to expand wind power, you know, exponentially. And the possibility of having up to 3-4 gigawatts of offshore wind, plus whatever tidal we might be able to provide as well, is absolutely attractive to them.
Okay, so just a moment, Bonzo. Paul, or can anybody explain in words of one syllables what contract for difference is?
So basically, it's the way the UK government subsidises energy prices in the UK. So if you're going to invest in millions in wind power, what you're going to want to do is make sure you're making a profit off the back of it. And the UK brings the price of electricity down to such a point that people will can afford to buy it by through this market, which they call the contracts for difference. Bonzo is absolutely spot on. So I've been banging on about this for years. The party's been lobbying government for a long time to try and get us involved in the UK contract for difference market, because without those subsidies, actually most forms of renewable at the time weren't competitive just in an open marketplace. Where we are today, though, is offshore wind is now itself competitive without subsidy. So we've seen in the UK, I think it was last year, it was the Scottish that announced the first subsidy-free UK offshore wind farm had been opened. And so actually we're in a space now where the contract for difference question is becoming less and less important, because the market and the technology is such a it's developed to such an extent that actually you don't need subsidy as much as you used to. It's still not true for things like tidal, which does still need a massive subsidy, and that's what I think Bonzo's talking about, is if we were included in that loop, when someone is then looking to invest in renewable power to sell into the UK, they'd be able to look at the Isle of Man as a location and say, well, maybe I'll build my offshore wind farm or my solar power farm or whatever it is.
Why aren't we in it?
Just because we're not in the UK. It is one of the slight downsides of our independence, is that sometimes the UK does things that doesn't include the Isle of Man for their own reasons. But again, I think Bonzo's right. The UK Prime Minister has been talking a lot about doubling down on renewable energy, and why wouldn't they welcome wind farms and energy being produced on the Isle of Man if it's feeding into their grid? Ultimately, everyone benefits.
Okay, all right. Thanks, Bonzo.
Okay, thanks.
All right, good to hear from you. Let's go to Paul Weatherall, Chair of Liberal Vanin. And I just want to go back to what John was talking about, and it is the source of impartial data. When we come to climate change, climate warnings, emergency, extinction, whatever you want to say, mm-hmm. Where does the public get impartial data from, as opposed to opinion?
The impartial data that we're all working on is produced by the IPCC reports, and then it's interpreted at a local level by each individual government. So we're relying on the IPCC reports coming out, updating. People keep saying that the climate scientists are changing their minds all the time, and why should we trust them? They're not changing their minds all the time. They're just getting further data in and refining their advice. They're not swerving from saying we're going from global warming to an ice age and back again. What they're saying is the data is suggesting that things are on the edge of being at the extreme of their predictions from 5-10 years ago, and we should be taking that into account. Governments then have to interpret that to see, as Laurie has said, about our individual emissions as a nation. So here on the island, our global emissions, what can we do to reduce those? What are the levels they're at, and what is reasonable for government to move towards in terms of the global goals of achieving net zero by 2050? Each nation, each jurisdiction has to take responsibility for what they do themselves to achieve those goals. And that's the island's deliberation at the moment. And the Climate Change Transformation Board advice that will be coming out in the next few weeks, couple of months, will help to direct us as to how we move forward over the next 5-10 years.
Okay, a note in, this is just, can you ask Mr. Hooper, why did you vote against the amendment, the Climate Change Act? Did you vote against the amendment?
I did, yes. Very good reasons for that. So my position hasn't changed. I'm still, I was the one that tried pushing for a 2035 date in the first place for our net zero. I'm still absolutely committed to the high ambition pathway. None of that has changed. The amendment itself, I think, wasn't a problem, to be honest, saying we should putting a marker in the sand, saying we should definitely have that target. But I think the underlying point is we need to have a plan to back it up. So what you, anyone listening to this show today will have heard, that actually not everyone's convinced that we have to do this. Not everyone is yet convinced that this is going to be worth the investment, which it absolutely will be. And I think part of bringing people on that journey is being able to demonstrate some facts and figures like Andy's been talking about. Well, how are you going to do it? How many houses are you going to insulate? How many tons of carbon are you going to reduce each year? And that is what the plan is going to have to set out. That's what the Climate Board are going to be bringing back in July. When they bring that plan back, I strongly believe that will come with an improved higher ambition target that will align to the 45% by 2030, because I think that's what James Corwin was recommending in his original report, and that's where I think we'll end up. And I'm pretty sure the Climate Board will be on the same mindset here. But that target won't just be a number on a page. That target will be backed by their climate action plan that tells us how we're going to get there, and that is what is most important. So this whole thing brings me back in mind of a quote that you hear sometimes about sausages, which basically says if you like laws and sausages, you probably shouldn't look at how they're made. And that's exactly the problem we've got here. Is I hope you will like the end result in July, but don't worry too much about how we got there.
Laurie Hooper and Paul Weatherall from Liberal Venet have been on Man in Line today. Our green future.
WINT.